First off, as we had promised, we wanted to bring back a discussion of the armory reuse proposal. Those proposals were presented in a great deal of detail last time, so I don't know that we have to repeat a lot of that. So I'm going to kind of open it up. I know myself and the rest of the council have had a chance to look at these and ask questions. So I would ask the council, where would you like to go with this at this point? Questions you might have. I'm sure we have representatives from the groups here in case we have questions. But I'm open to some ideas. Mr. Bilderbeck, you want to start off?
Sure.
Simply because it's your ward?
Sure, I will. And I have been contacted or have been asked to contact and talk to some of the groups since that presentation. I have felt I was not, because I think what was presented, what was given for us, was what we should be basing our thoughts on. And I have some concerns about how they would support it. I didn't think that the plans went into a lot of great detail on where and how they would come up with enough finances to be able to operate. And then also didn't tell me what in great detail and what expectations are from the city to support that. Along with that, I've heard from other groups that they felt that this was not open to them to be able to put in a request, which I was a little surprised to hear, but I listened to that just as well, that there was concerns that it was not broad enough. Some people, and I'm not sure how well they were associated with some of the other groups here in town, the school system being one, that they would have been interested but didn't realize they could participate. And so I think there was a lot of confusion. What we thought was clear, it seems to have not been clear to others. So with that, my feeling is that if we make the statement here today that this project is open to everybody for all options, anything from us helping in a public-private partnership to letting some group take it on by themselves, as well as to potentially sell it. Because I heard that people said, well, that was an option, but they did not know that we would entertain that. I think if we were to sell it, there has to be hooks involved. The fact that it's a national building on the National Historic List, I don't think we want to turn it over and let somebody just take it apart. But we need to work to preserve that. But my feeling is, it seems like all of a sudden after this was all done, there is a ton of more groups that are seen to have some interest. I don't know, and I doubt that there would be a lot of groups coming forward after this. I think what you would see is you'd see the groups that did put in submit their plans, refine it, because they feel after, I'm sure that we met and had those discussions, there were some things they could do to enhance their program. So my feeling is, we're under no time frame. Some people have called and asked if we were kicking the seniors out of the senior center. That is not happening. We are not the ones setting the deadline dates for them to be out. Those are their own deadline dates. So my feeling is, I would just as soon reopen this project and go through the end of the year. We can discuss the timeline. But I would like to give everybody that opportunity, the groups that presented, an opportunity to come back and write their plans a little more in detail and what their expectations are of the city if they were to go in there, and give us a better idea of how they would operate and run the facility. If we looked at some of them, it looked like they were running with one or two staff and otherwise volunteers. It's a fairly big building to try to do that with. So I'm looking at more giving everybody an opportunity, and I'd like to see us open it up to make sure everybody understands we are not refusing any options.
If I could, I'll just insert a little more detail on the timeline. I think we originally said that the facility could come available, you know, roughly first quarter of 2017. And as Mark says, the Senior Center, they've set their own deadline in terms of moving out and moving into their new facility, October, November time frame. So there isn't an urgency from that perspective. As Mark said, we're not kicking anybody out, and so there's not an urgency from that standpoint. So just that added comment. Who's next? Who else would like to comment? Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, I had mentioned this previously. At the beginning of this discussion, we had talked about the possibility of selling the building. And as we go forward, I think in order to do that, I don't think you could typically do that through an RFP process. So I'd like to get an appraisal, as Mr. Bilbach discussed. I mean, certainly it would be title restrictions that it would have to be maintained. That anything reused would have to be maintained its historical character. But I would like to seriously explore the option of selling the building. Depending on where that goes, if that doesn't pan out, then we'd have to consider reuse through RFP process. And at that point, we'll have a decision of what the best use would be. But I want to fully explore the option of selling the building with the understanding that it would be the uses would be restricted to maintain that historic nature of the building.
All right, and I assume that could mean a variety of partnerships even. It doesn't have to necessarily be one entity or private or public group that would buy it. There could be a co-joint proposal. So, I mean, it opens the door, that's for sure. Next, Mr. Wojcik.
I feel frustrated from the standpoint that it seems like we're spinning our wheels and seems like we're, you know, wasting a lot of staff time and wasting a lot of community time and, frankly, wasting a lot of my own time reading these proposals if we're not certain we want to do something with it. I'm having seen firsthand what C4 did, the salon did, to activate kind of a dead part of downtown. I'm really excited about having spaces in the downtown that serve the people of Rochester. Not just professional classes who might be visiting or other things targeted at non-Rochester groups. From my standpoint, I would like to see the building have multiple uses, be busy all day. I think that the sale offer is always out there. Frankly, even if we put somebody into the building, there's still always the possibility to sell. I think that principally, the value in that property is the parking lot across the street, not the building itself. I think the developers will view the building itself as a liability as opposed to something that they're going to tear down and rehab. That's in the comments that I've gotten from the community, I have this incredible sense that people feel a little bit beaten down by the DMC stuff again and again and again, and they seem like they're losing things that they loved about downtown, places they'd like to go. And I don't know if DMC is really the culprit for that as much as just rising land prices in a highly desirable area. But I don't know that everyone feels welcome in the downtown right now. And one thing the salon did is it brought a lot of those people that we didn't tend to see into the downtown, got them active, got them participating, meeting with other people. So that kind of collaboration is something that I would be excited to support at some point.
Okay. And then I think there are some criteria we would probably all agree on, whether it's, if it's repurposed, we want to retain the historic character of the building,
Yeah. However
it's used on the inside. And I think from a prudent financial perspective, we want any going entity to be self-sufficient so that we're not burdening taxpayers with subsidizing operation. Now, I'm not saying I prefer one or another or even a third option, but I think there's some basics that we'll look for as a council, as means.
Well, my initial thought was we'd receive two applications on time, and subsequently we received a third one. And initially I thought we should not consider the third one. After after just reviewing this a little more carefully, I thought this may be an opportunity for us to consider many other venues for this facility, perhaps. One might be to sell the building outright, and you've already said the historical preservation is key as well. The reason I thought about selling it as a possibility, and I didn't think about the appraisal value, and that can't be under an RFP request for a proposal, was that we pay a considerable amount of money now to support our three buildings, the Civic Theater, the Arts Center, Mayo Civic, and the Senior Citizen Center. And maybe if we would at least think about selling it, we may be able to hire some additional staff to support the work that's needed within the city. So I know that's not a clear answer, but those are the two things I'm kind of bouncing around. I love the arts, and I think that it would be a great place for partnerships, where many of the artists are being displaced. But I wonder if, you know, we shouldn't even explore some partnerships rather than accepting all of that building fees. It's not the administrative fees, it's the building fees that we pay every year. So I haven't, you know, I don't have a specific point except to say I'm willing to listen and hear other thoughts on it. But one is to not to open the RFP because we have two people that met the deadline. The other one is we could close this RFP because we don't feel like we have enough input from enough people, that have clearly there have been others that have expressed interest, including this for this other school or other for-profits. And so I don't have a good answer, but I think we need to examine at least the selling of the building. Can we, how would we use the money, whether it be for roads and bridges or for staff or building permits? I don't know how it would be used. It's something that would be benefit to the city and to the public, as opposed to continuing with the expenditures for another nonprofit organization moving in.
And I think as a council, we're on record as being very supportive of the arts community by virtue of some of our investment in facilities. Your thought is intriguing from the standpoint, purely from financials. I have a strong suspicion Mr. Quenneville is going to tell us we're going to have some interesting budgeting challenges. Our next topic on streets and deficit there further exacerbate some of our budgeting and financial issues. So, we may want to consider all options, Mr. Ruska.
Well, I just listening here to colleagues, and I think that, you know, when we hear there's more groups interested, I think this is a good problem. You know, we put a deadline to kind of see where we're at. I don't think that the rules say if you miss the deadline, you're completely out of the picture. I think the more options we have to look at, frankly, the two that we had and the third one I looked into a little bit, I like all three of them. I think they're all good. And you know, so when if we're pressed to make a decision today, I could make one, but I think I like Mark's idea. Let's kind of make sure that everybody kind of is in on the table, and let's see what our best option is. You know, our goal, our job here is to find the best fit for the community, and what's the overall going to the best fit of these groups. You know, look into those a little bit more in detail and make that decision. And the fact that we have more people that are interested, I think, is a good thing. So I'm fine with waiting until the end of the year. If we were pressed to make a decision, I could do that now too. But I think that we want to look at the big picture here. This is something that we're going to have to deal with for a lot of years. So let's make sure we're looking at all the options and seeing what works out best here for the big picture of the community.
And I think that needs to be underscored, that the proposals we've seen, none of them are bad. I think what it's done is spurred some additional community dialogue, and now we're starting to perhaps hear of some other ideas and maybe collaborations and whatever else. So with due respect to Mr. Wojcik's comment about we don't want to churn and spin our wheels too long, certainly, but on the other hand, we want to make sure we're making the best decision possible for our community.
I would say that it's important to remember, too, that, if we do nothing, it's not like our costs go away. We've got significant, utility operating, probably some capital costs that are just going to go if we hold that building and do nothing. So, short of arriving at some answer, if that building's sitting empty, I am more than willing to also entertain give one of these groups a shot as a pilot in the interim. If this process is dragging on, I just wouldn't want an asset like that in such a prime location to sit vacant, certainly, especially since we're going to be probably paying a significant portion to operate that building anyway.
Okay. Ms. Means, then Mr. Campion.
You know, I think since we, there may be this option that someone would be willing to buy it. I don't know if we know what the appraisal of the building is, and perhaps we should find that out. Secondly, if we do have a request for proposal, and you think you want to have a one-year lease or something like that, that should be pretty clear, because I'm not sure if the Arts Committee would want to move in it just for 1 year. So perhaps those two pieces of information would be invaluable. Those are the two things I just wanted to mention about the appraisal and the pilot program as a possibility.
Okay, Mr. Campion.
I don't think it's been a secret we've been looking for a tenant for this building for some time, right? I mean, you haven't been keeping it a secret and talking about
it. No, we didn't have in the original proposal that we'd accept it. We'd accept any proposals to purchase the building or commercialize it if there was an interest. Now, we didn't receive any, but we didn't market it either.
So I just look at some of the other spots we've had that have come up. Were we marketing those other spots that have been kind of, we've entered into agreements for some redevelopment discussions, or did that just kind of come about naturally because people saw an opportunity and approached us?
You mean like for the fire station? And those
sure.
Things. Yeah.
Most of the time people come forward with an idea for a reuse project, is
yes.
That correct?
Correct.
They don't wait for us to put an RFP out to
correct.
See if there's interest. I guess I'm a little bit concerned that this feels like some can-kicking. If it feels like hand-kicking, it smells like hand-kicking, it's probably hand-kicking. I was ready today to say I was going to support the arts reuse. I thought it was, and I'll go out there and say it. That's fine. If I have to be the leader that way, that's okay. But I think we have to have a process that's going to come to a conclusion. I've said it before, I'll say it again. You start letting people in, I think we're going to have a real hard time ever closing this down. It's not about excluding people. It's about having a predictable process that people can count on to produce a result. I think of at work, if I showed up with a deadline and I said, well, hey, you know what? This is one answer today, but why don't we wait and I'll have a better answer 6 weeks from now? You know, I think we have to be realistic about what the expectations of our community are for getting work done and reaching conclusions. I thought the two proposals were both put together well. I have to be honest with you, with RFPs, you get a lot of guessing. Like, this is the nature of the business here, is that people are, they're guessing about the market, they're guessing about what they can charge. So more people can be welcome to put proposals together, but I think it flies in the face of some groups that put a lot of effort into bringing these things together on time. And if nothing, delivering something on time shows me that they care about it. So it looks like others have different ideas, and I understand that, but I think we need to have a real honest conversation about how this comes to conclusion, because it feels like right now it's a little bit off the tracks.
Okay. Mr. Bilderman.
Yeah, and I understand where you're coming from, but I also want to make sure we make the right choice. And I think even if you were to go back and talk to the groups who presented, the two groups that had put stuff in earlier, if they could, they would do things a little differently today. And I know that's a fact for the fact that a couple of groups have called and asked to meet with me, and I have not, because I'm going off basically what we did on that first time around when we got that third proposal. We sat here and discussed, do we listen to the third proposal or not? And we chose not to. You know, so I understand where you're coming from. I agree with it to a sense, but I also think that we need to be very careful and make good decisions with the taxpayers' dollars and what goes on. And we've been accused a number of times of not being open and transparent, so that's why my feeling is here we just say this is the way it is. Everything is on the table, and we make sure that we give everybody that opportunity. That's not a rush time that we have to make a rush decision. Again, even that many of us have received calls saying we're throwing the seniors out of the senior facility. That's not true.
Right.
And so to make the right decision, Ms. Means talked about it earlier about maybe some of these groups would collaborate. That's something that I hadn't heard discussed before. And so that's something that they might be able to do and be able to have those discussions. I don't think it's wrong for us to reopen this and make sure that everybody understands that all options are there. If that's still the best option come whenever, then that will still be the best option come whenever.
Okay. Ms. Means, then, Mr. Campion.
Just so the public is aware, I bet every one of us as council members have volunteered or have been appointed and served for many years on various arts boards. And we all love the arts, and we know how valuable it is, and we know what a learning opportunity is for many of our people that may not have it without the Arts Center. And I certainly would stand up and shout for art in this community, all levels. But in terms of this discussion, I think is just critically important, first of all, so we can evaluate what is the best decision that we want to make for the taxpayers, for the general public and visitors. You know, I would hesitate to vote for, you know, the arts, but I think we need to find out how much it's worth and determine in our budget how much more do we have. This is an extra organization that we would be supporting through operating expenses.
Mr. Campion.
So I just went out to check. It looks like this was originally posted sometime before September 9th. 2015?
It was posted in September of 2015. I don't remember the exact date. And then the deadline for the submittals was the end of March.
So I bristle at the idea of spending a year gathering and evaluating these proposals as a rush or somehow preventing people from contributing. Additionally, I'll point out that Armory, RFP, Rochester, MN, it's the first hit. You know, it's not like it's being secretively hidden out there. I think people had ample opportunity. What I guess I'd like to hear from other council members is, come November 31st or December 31st, what are people going to say to me when I show up and say, I heard from another group that wants to be involved? Like, is now 18 months enough? What's enough? You know, how much is enough notice? Is posting it in our official bulletin, you know, what is enough?
Mr. Russell.
Question, Mr. Spade. What did we do to market it? What did we do to advertise it and get it out there to everybody?
We didn't do anything to market it.
Okay.
We put the R. You mean market the building?
To let everybody know we were doing it, right?
No, we just put the RFP.
He's asking about what steps you took to publicize the RFP.
Oh, I don't even recall.
We didn't do it.
Think,
we didn't.
For sure,
didn't
we,
do
we
didn't do
it on
that.
The city's
right.
web page.
I
mean,
so
I
guess
there were plenty of discussion at the council meeting before it even got published, you know, to make, and there was, you know, obviously news stories at that time related to the publication of the RFP, and it was placed right up, as Councilmember Campion said, right on the front page of the city's website. I don't recall, I'd have to go back in the files and dig, I don't recall that we specifically sent emails to various local groups, but
okay, thank you.
Okay, other comments?
Just to add under that question, if the council comes to agreement that they should move ahead with this, Mr. Spades, what do you plan to do differently to see that we get more than two applications in a year?
I don't know if there's anything that I can do to make someone submit anything.
You misunderstand me. I don't mean to make anyone. I mean just to make people aware that this is an option. And if you only had two in 2 years, do you send out advertisements? I mean, how do you let others know?
Well, if we were going to market it, we'd probably hire a commercial broker.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but to just put the RFP back out there again, I'm not real sure what we would do. I guess we could try and get a list of contacts from various local, organizations and specifically send it to them via email or whatever. That may be one possibility. Other than that, I don't know what else. I don't know what the answer is there.
I have another idea, commercial broker.
I just, quite frankly, I thought... My opinion is I thought we did an adequate job of getting it out there, but apparently there were some that indicated they weren't notified or weren't aware of it.
Mr. Wiseau?
I feel that the notification was very prominent. A lot of people knew about it. great media coverage throughout all forms of media. I'm not concerned about that. I just wanted to bring up, too, didn't we just get an appraisal on that parking lot when we acquired it?
Yes.
So we actually have a current appraisal on the parking
lot.
The parking and the building itself, though, is, you know, the land underneath it is worth more than the building is. And if we're going to preserve it as a historic asset, you know, it's not going to transact at any significant dollar amount.
I do think, though, that really the appraisal was on a portion of the parking lot. We also have a portion of the parking lot the city owns. So I do think if you want information on the sale price, you should have a full appraisal of both the two pieces of the parking lot and of the building. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, could I ask your thoughts?
I've heard a lot. I agree with Mr. Bilderbeck. I see nothing wrong with reopening this until the end of the year. The potential is it being an arts kind of facility. I'm concerned about that. I'd like to see a more proven maybe finance stream, funding stream for whoever. Talk about a commercial broker, that makes some sense to me. The potential also for selling the building. We actually have three proposals, more than two, and maybe with a little more effort to it, we might see more, but I don't have any problem with us reopening this and spending a little more time with, or not this time, but the effort to try and get it promoted as a potential. And if we, and make sure that it's known that it's for sale, but it is a historic building, and we need to retain that. So, so anyway, I would agree. I think Mr. Ruska said some things that agreed with Mark Bilderbeck, and I support that thinking as well.
And I would agree that we could treat this like the business transaction it is. I mean, it's a city asset, and we're trying to do our due diligence here. You know, doing the appraisal might be, or could be a very good step. With deference to Mr. Campion, though, I think we can't let this just go on in perpetuity. We would have to hold fast to any subsequent deadlines. Clearly, the project has much more notoriety now than perhaps it did before. We can debate whether it was marketed or the public was well informed, but clearly, I don't know that anyone could say that that's the case now. Just a couple of thoughts. Mr. Quinville?
I'll just bring this up because rather than meeting earlier on the reuse of the chateau and this consultant that was did a bunch of discussion with area people about the possible reuse of the chateau, talked about the armory reuse proposal with the arts, and so they have a preliminary recommendation. I'll just read it since I said I'd bring it up at the meeting. And one of those, one of those recommendations is to incentivize DMC developers to include arts and cultural components in their project. As the DMC takes shape, we would encourage the city and the DMC to incentivize arts-friendly developments that reserve space for public art pieces, fill halls with the work of local artists, or maybe even include artist work or teaching space. Such efforts will help ensure that the Rochester small arts groups continue to have a presence downtown, regardless of what happens with the DMC. So I realize you probably moved beyond talk of any individual proposals, but I brought that up just since I indicated I would mention it at this meeting since it was a topic of some conversation.
All right. Anyone up, Mr. Woodard?
I'm just incredibly frustrated that this is how far we've gotten in 11 months. At the last meeting a few weeks ago, I specifically said at the end of that meeting, tell me the date when we'll make a decision. And this was the date that was given that we were going to make a decision. And what I'd say is if this group is going to have a hard time coming to an end point or a decision, maybe we should find a third party or someone that can take on this work for us. I'm just uncomfortable that I see how much work both of these groups put in over the last 11 months. I see how many people are here. I know how big of an issue this has been for a lot in the community, and I just don't want to keep kicking the can down the road.
Mr. Hickey.
So, I mean, I don't know, when I spoke, I seemed indecisive, but my clear desire would be to sell this building. If we don't have an adequate use that would preserve the historic nature of the building, then the next step would be to consider proposals for the best possible reuse of the building.
So to reject the RFP is your
correct
decision?
All right.
I feel rejecting the RFP is more genuine than just reopening it and letting more people kind of throw more hats in the ring. So I guess I tend to feel the same way. If we're not going to embrace one of these two groups that's put, what I have to imagine is a significant amount of effort into meeting the criteria and answering the request, which clearly defines this as being a historic building. We're looking for a reuse fund that we all agreed to submit to the public for consumption and response. Then I don't see a reason to keep this open. This is just setting the wrong impression for the public about what we intend to do.
All right, other comments, questions? So, okay, I just want to make sure I'm clear on Mr. Campion's comment. So what would you advocate then?
He's basically saying you reject all of the proposals for the RFP. And if we want to do another RFP, I think someone needs to work with Terry to put together one that's very clear about what the expectations are for review. Because the RFP is only, I think it's 4 or 5 pages long. I thought it was very clear in delivering my expectations of what a proposal would be. But, you know, if other people have different expectations about what these proposals need to include or things that were lacking from the existing ones, close this RFP down, start a new one, or start the process of appraising the building for sale. That's how we move forward. But let's draw this to a conclusion. Let's move.
And maybe that was semantics. My apologies. That's what I was hearing.
Oh, sure.
From Mr. Bilderbach, is it close it, start it over. I know we said just keep it open or something like that. But I would agree with you that if we were going to go down that path, you would just be explicit and say we're rejecting these proposals. And I want to make it clear, it's not an indictment of anybody or the proposals that were submitted. We just have some new information that is worth considering. That one of those being outright sale of the building. So I would agree with you that if we're going to close it and start over, make sure that we're clear on some of the criteria that we have for any proposal and go from there. Mr. Bilderbach?
Yeah, and I agree with that, Nick. I didn't mean to make it sound like I wanted to just continue to let this drag. I think there's been a lot of work done by both groups, and I think they put their heart and soul into this. There's no doubt about that. And it's not the fact that I don't like these groups. It has nothing to do with that. But I'm looking to see, one we talked, there was an $89,000 ask right up front. But is that going to be a continual thing? Is that going to be one time only? You talked about staff. How do the hours and things of that nature get to be? We want to see, as Mr. Wojcik talked about, we want to see that building utilized and used frequently and continually. We don't want it to sit there empty. Or we don't want to see the hours be from 8 to noon and let it sit. And so there were some things in the questions, and when they talk about staffing, how do you staff a building that size with one person? And they talked about more volunteers. Those were things I was hoping to see. And again, like I said, I'll definitely say the arts group has reached out and wanted to get more information, but at this point I thought we need to look at, just like we did with the third applicant, we said no to them because they were after the deadline. So I took what we got in the packets and tried to understand in the best way possible how this and what this does for that building and how we should be looking at it. I want to know if it's a one-time ask. Are they expecting us, and these are conversations that haven't taken place, but we need to make clear, are they expecting us to maintain the building like we did for the senior center, like we do for the arts center, like we do for the theater? It didn't go into all that. And I realize that's an awful lot, and they're probably saying, well, how would we have known? Well, they want. But this is something that I think is, when we talk about being open, when we talk about looking all the way across the board, these are things that we need to put in any kind of RFP that we do, that we're looking to see if they're looking for continued city support or if they're not. And they may not know either, and I understand that. It's very difficult to put that business plan together. But I do believe that after what they've seen go on so far, that they would have approached it probably differently than they had initially. And I think that's why we need to do, when we make these plans, make sure that we're very clear on what we're expecting. Do we want to know, and I would think that we would want to know, are you expecting city support continually or one time? What are you looking for the city to be doing? I mean, it'll be city property.
still, unless they outright buy it, but what expectations do they have of the city to help participate in keeping that building up and operational?
Sure.
And that wasn't said. And so it's not that I don't like the proposals, I do, but I just felt that as representing the city, they were a little incomplete. And that was probably on what we asked. And we need to make sure that we asked the correct questions or pose the proper terms out there of what we expect to happen for the city or want from the city.
So the sense I'm getting, we'll see where the council's at, is, and I realize it's not, might not be unanimous, but the sense I'm getting is there might be a sentiment toward officially closing out this RFP, rejecting the two proposals, starting a new process, a new, however we'd want to work with Mr. Spaeth to retool the RFP requirements to be explicit in terms of the operational side of it, whatever expected obligations there are of the city, articulating the historic nature of the building and preservation of that character. I'm not sure how quickly that could come together, you know, retooling that RFP. But then at some point, put it back out there, but put a deadline that this is it. I mean, this is your opportunity.
So,
Mr. Campion.
No trust at all.
So, to the others in the room, I will say that I respect the people who sat at this table, and despite my frustrations with this process, I don't appreciate that particular laughter. I think it's not conducive to the work we need to do as a community. I will support rejecting the RFP because I believe, though I obviously support one of these two, it's the only correct move to take at this point. Councilmember Bilderback, I think you bring up a plethora of stuff that is of interest. I don't second guess your reasoning for coming to a conclusion. We're going to disagree all the time. I think that my big misgiving about this entire thing is not laying out a clear process and holding ourselves to a higher standard about how we're going to conduct our business. That is my issue with what we've done. To take a step back and reject the process, reject the proposals, that's fantastic. You know, I'm not happy with the outcome, but that's an outcome. So I'll appreciate that. I'm glad to hear that it was just a misunderstanding about people wanting to move forward by adding new things in. I think coming to a conclusion is the only appropriate step to take at this point.
All right. Other comments? Anyone? Ms. Means.
I would like to see that appraisal information on the the building, if it were sold, we'd have that also as a comparison.
Well, right. Some clarification now. You indicate that you want to look at resubmitting proposals for the usage of the building and not the sale of the building. Is that correct? Or you want both of them blended in?
So I'd like to see the option of sale of the building explored first.
Do you want to market it?
Yes.
Along with the possible reuse proposals?
I'd like to see the marketing first, but we'll see what everybody else says.
I'm seeing Mr. Campion shake.
I don't want to see another set of RFP proposals because I don't feel like this had no meaning. Closing out the RFP now, let's go pursue sale. Let's look at the total, you know, let's look at that option. And if we want to come back, let's do it. But let's come back and have a set process because now we can clearly all see the shortcomings of this particular leaving things too open-ended. We'll come back around if we feel like we're not getting the value out of the building for a sale. I fully support the idea of if we're going to close the RFP with an official action of the council, then bring it back and let's engage some sort of group to go to try and market the building and sell it.
Mr. Lorde.
I'm actually quite accustomed to not always being on the winning side of votes, so got that going for me. I think the one message the group should probably take from here is seek alternate locations. I do think that that's, you know, what I'm hearing today. I don't necessarily agree with that. I would concur that if we're closing down this path, then perhaps Mr. Hickey's route is the appropriate route to take. I feel that I did get enough information, or I could read enough information between the proposal and the presentation that was done in terms of, you know, what our reasonable expectations would be. Understanding that with a building like this, you never know when you're going to get that $200,000 hit. So I think we just have to go with the will of the group.
Okay. So is the will of the group that we market the building first?
That's what I'm hearing, that would be the first step. You know, and
I'd like to close the RFP before we start, would be my personal.
And this will require formal council action.
Right. So
I think the city administrator is just looking for some guidance on how to draft the RC.
So I just want to reiterate. So we would potentially formally close the RFP process, rejecting the ones that we've received. But then we would proceed with marketability or marketing the property. And depending on the outcome of that effort, we would potentially consider new RFPs. I'm asking the question, what you were saying. We wouldn't do them in
I suppose if you have no interest in anybody purchasing it, then you'd be back to see what other community uses you might have for
it. I'm just asking if we do those that sequentially or in parallel.
And you don't have to get to that last point. You simply reject the bids, direct staff to begin the marketing of the building for sale, and leave it at that.
That's what I would. That would be my preferred way to go for right now, and just let it cool off for a bit and see what can get out of it.
Yeah, I'm just looking to clarify. Okay.
Now, it'd be my assumption when we do market that building, we wouldn't market those parking lots separate from the building. They have to be one situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's try to get it together. All right. So once again, I realize it might not be unanimous. It's a tough decision, but is that the sense of the council?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, that's that one for today anyway.
You may want to summarize it for everybody here in case you're kind of lost where you're at.
On the September 7th council meeting, there will be a request for council action asking the council to reject all the proposals that were submitted in response to the RFP and then direct staff to begin the process of marketing the entire site for sale.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, let's move on to an easier one. Street maintenance deficit. Mr. Freed, are you going to lead us through this?
I would like to.
Maybe I should introduce it. Because Richard probably feels like short-circuited in his proposal here. But I thought that if you are going to determine what amount of money, if any amount of money that you're going to appropriate to help fund the unfunded liability of streets, that you should, at least should have some information about what money you're spending right now and what money that you may need in order to continue to with the maintenance activities that you have been approving for the last few years, which I think we've been spending a fairly decent amount of money on trying to overlay the streets and keep the streets in good shape. And I think for the most part, our city has some streets that are in pretty good shape. But the thing that I wanted to also point out to you is that we haven't levied much money for street overlays for a number of years because we were fortunate to have some money in this account, J2200, which after the 2016 maintenance activities, I don't know how much money there'll be left, but I have the feeling that there won't be a lot of money left. And so I don't know what amount of money you'll have to maintain levy in 2017 to keep up with that same level, but I think it could be a million or two more than you've had possible. And if I look at the things that I've gone through you before with the salary increases for 17, that adds 1.6 million. The other employees that you started in April, that adds another 500,000. That's about 2.1 million. Then we've had a number of catastrophic health claims, so Dale and I are recommending an increase in the premiums for self-insured of 14%, would add another about 1.1 million. And then, so you have it with that, just about the 3.7 million that you approved for your levy in 2015 or for 16, without adding a whole bunch of other things. And so I guess I understand some of the validity of trying to fund your unfunded needs, but I don't think that the property tax is an adequate funding source to do that, and I don't think politically you could come even close to trying to do that. Now, you don't have any property tax limits at the current time, but over the years we've had many instances where you've had property tax limits which wouldn't allow you to levy that sort of property taxes necessary to take care of some of your unfunded liability. So while I'm not trying to shoot down the concept, I don't think your property tax mechanism is a sufficient source to do that. And maybe you look at some other things to help fund some of those needs other than property tax, such as streetlight utility or national gas franchise fee or some things like that, which have been introduced in the past. So I didn't want to necessarily shoot down Richard's proposal to levy some additional money each year, but I just don't see how you're going to get there.
Mr. Hickey?
I just had a quick question. One of the first things you said, so with the drawdown of J2200 category, are you saying that we would need to add $1 million to the property tax levy just to sustain what we've done?
It's possible. I don't have that figure yet, but it's possible.
When do we think we'll know that? Or?
Well, I guess when we go through the budget request, and I haven't started that yet. And I don't know how much of this $2.9 million we'll have left that was in that fund as of the end of July.
Stephen, you listed a few items that we'll have to deal with here in a couple of months. You're probably closest to the budget as anyone in the broader context. Are you getting to a point, can you posit even a hypothetical number of what we're looking at for a levy, if any?
No, I think we had a 3.7 increase last year, and I don't remember what, I think that was under 7%. I don't remember the exact percentage. I should have, but I don't remember that exact percentage, and I hate to kind of look at percentages.
Right.
But I think from a practical purpose, you as a governing body will be looking at percentages, and the public will be looking at percentages.
Yeah.
And it's not likely to be very pretty.
Okay, so...
Starting off on the right foot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I don't mean to shoot down this concept, but I think there's the reality of it is when it comes time for you as a governing body to levy those taxes, you're going to have a hard time putting that extra money into unfunded liability. And even I think even from the citizen standpoint, I think they believe that we have pretty good streets, and I think for the most part we do have pretty good streets. So I'm not so certain that the average citizen was going to say, well, let's levy some more money so we can set it aside so the kids don't have to pay it. So a lot of people I don't think would want to agree to some significant property tax increases to help with your unfunded liability for the streets.
Mr. Ruska, then Mr. Wojcik.
Stephen, could you explain in your statement here to us about the negative balance where we went from a $4.2 million in the state municipal funded revenues to a negative balance of almost $3 million. Can you explain how that happened, what that means, basically?
Well, we sort of used that municipal state aid money and advanced funded some projects. So, in effect, the organization has borrowed against that money to fund some of these projects, which has the disadvantage, I suppose, if that money is not available for future projects unless you continue the same advanced funding for a long period of time. But if you want to pay yourself back or you get back to zero, of course, then you have to slow down in that process.
So, in other words, next year we could just not do any of those state projects to get caught up, or we could keep borrowing ahead of time. And
if you want to continue the pace, you'd almost have to keep the advanced funding for a while, hopefully not in the same amount, so you eventually build yourself back to a zero balance.
Okay, so we went from a $4 million to almost $3 million.
And I don't know, Richard, if you have any, you've managed to have money, if you have any comments about it.
Dale, chime in if I don't say this right. I mean, the bills have been paid, so, I mean, there isn't like there's a deficit that you owe somebody money. You've just borrowed internally to pay the bills. So it shows as a negative for that particular account, but yet the bills have been paid, so there's really no financial deficit the city has incurred. It's just that funds came from other reserves.
So it's in debt to other funds in turn?
Yes, but that...
And is the backstop for that future payments from the state, or is that just a deficit we owe to pay back to other funds?
Future payments at this point in time.
So future payments that we're anticipating receiving.
Right.
I would say the answer is the opposite of Stephen, but we won't Because you've already paid the bill, so it's a matter of whether you want to replenish the where the funds came from out of future state aid obligations, or whether you want to just incur that as an expense, write it off on the books, if you will, and not further deploy.
And I don't agree with writing it off on the books.
Like,
I don't think that
too, as long as
that's not a good plan.
All right, it's a little confusing to me.
So essentially, what we've done is
obviously
we've paid.
We owe $3 million.
We paid, but it's part of the project that's eligible for MSA funding. But we didn't get enough MSA funding in the projects that we completed in that year. But we paid for it anyway out of our project fund area that is allocated for MSA. And so we essentially spent that in the hole, and the only way it's funded is by support from the whole construction fund. But those monies all have allocations in places they're supposed to be too, and so ultimately we need to get it repaid back from future MSA payments.
You get annual payments from MSA.
So are we? So did we spend 2017 money on 2016 projects?
No. And again, what they're...
No, but we spent other funds on...
You're speaking literally. I'm speaking in terms, and I think you're asking in terms of the budget. Did we budget against and spend future payments that we were anticipating?
Yes. We did that.
So,
and here's the thing, so I wouldn't want to write it off on the books, because then what you do that, and then you do it again, do the same thing again, and you write that off? Because I don't think we probably shouldn't be advanced funding for the manager of good budget management. So I would have some real hesitancy to recommend we write it off, unless you can never do it again.
Right. So we did, in fact, spend money based on anticipated future.
Right. We did.
State aid. Okay.
And in order to continue the same level of funding, you got to continue the same advance funding.
All right, Mr. Wojcik.
Yeah, got a couple thoughts on this. It was 50 years that got us into this situation. We have going on 650 cul-de-sacs in the city of Rochester, and we effectively lose money on every one when you look at the revenues that are brought in. And we keep building more and more money-losing infrastructure. The population of Rochester approximately doubled, but our geographic area went up fivefold. Somebody's got to pay for all that stuff. You know, one of the things I thought here, I thought the Minneapolis and St. Paul examples were interesting, but I think what I point out there is that, you know, population-wise, economy-wise, they're growing faster than Rochester right now, but their infrastructure is staying the same, so they're becoming more efficient. We as a community have made the conscious decision to continue to become less and less efficient, more infrastructure to serve a lower increase in the number of people. So, you know, growth for the sake of growth is that's what cancer cells do. You got to be smart about this stuff. And I don't think that we've been very smart. And I also take exception when we, you know, bring in these experts and engineers and technical folks that can tell us what the future liabilities are on our roads. And then we just go there, it looks okay to me. We'll just not worry about that cost. We know what the 50-year life cycle to maintain a road should be, and you know that's how we came up with that liability. And those who saw my website did a little math on it, and it basically came up with our present value unfunded liabilities about $1.4 billion is what I came up with, which is $12,500 for every man, woman, and child in the city of Rochester. And so I think that just doing nothing, I mean, that's what we've done for 20 years, is really not really addressed it or drained one-time funds. We do have to do something to address it, and I'm not in favor of the, I thought it was a 40% tax increase that would take to actually keep up with the maintenance needs, but it turns out it's actually more than that, because we've been using these one-time funds that have been depleted. There are so many small steps that we could do to start to right the ship. You know, some of our developments have private cul-de-sacs, some of them have public. And for the life of me, I can't figure out what the public benefit is of these things. They're huge money losers. We could stop subsidizing some of the sprawl. I mean, we know from our analysis of the fee structure on the wastewater charges that we are charging significantly higher fees to everyone in Rochester and their monthly sewer charge so that we can offer highly subsidized rates for the development of McMansions in the community. That's a, you know, it's good for the development process, but it's bad for the city in the long run. And we've known about this for a long time. I think you have to work on a fix-it-first kind of thing and stop the this endless expansion of public roadways as we dig the hole deeper and deeper. I think there are good points in here about the non-property tax sources. I would agree with Stephen that property taxes are fundamentally unfair because what we're really doing is we're putting the burden on small businesses effectively because they're the ones that are disproportionately hit. And I wouldn't want to see us trying to solve this problem by that. I mean, really, it's the residential streets are the ones that are causing these types of issues. And, you know, there's simple common sense things that we could be doing to extend the life of our infrastructure. You know, that includes the street tree planting. That includes things like the garbage hauling district. We heard that was costing us a couple million dollars a year here recently. I think my last point is I don't want to see us start to borrow a huge sum of money to address an issue that's kind of an ongoing issue. So my thought here is that it took us 50 years to get into this situation, and it might take a similar amount of time to get us out. But you know, I've raised the issue before that why don't we take a look at before we accept public infrastructure, see if there's going to be resources there to financially maintain it, and that's always been something that the staff and the council have been unwilling to do. And until we do that, we're just going to keep digging the hole bigger. And we're going to have to find the revenues. We built this stuff. We need $31.9 million a year to maintain this stuff. Unless we're going to get rid of it, I think we ought to figure out how to pay for it. And, it's just, I'm glad we have numbers now. It's been something I've been pushing on for a very long time, and we see how bad the numbers really look. But now we got to take some action.
I would agree with Mr. Ward's comments that
really
it took us a while to get to this point, so we're certainly not going to reconcile the situation in 1 year or one budget cycle. I'm also of the options, if those are what's on the table, of the option, I'm not inclined to support the option where we borrow money. That just seems like it exacerbates the problem.
Yeah.
In my mind, the one comment that was kind of intriguing reading these articles, and this is kind of a hypothetical question maybe for Mr. Wojcik, that if we've got Minneapolis, St. Paul that are growing in population, growing in economy, not growing in land area perceptibly, in other words, they're not building new roads, and yet they still have a deficit. So how you would think that if their economy and population and tax base is growing, but they're not building any new roads, it's more of a philosophical question. Why are they still faced with huge road maintenance deficits? Mr. Newman?
Yeah, if I could point out, it hasn't always been this way. In my view, going back to the 70s, the legislature and a few imprudent cities by over-assessing really created this problem. I mean, until then, cities assessed. Philosophy was if you had a normal residential street, every 30 years the city would come in and redo that street. They'd assess you 100% of the cost, you pay for it. That's 72% of the problem that Michael is saying, and Richard's got different numbers, but now you can't do that. I mean, they then passed a law that said you have to show the cost you're imposing is going to increase the value of the property, and you won't. You won't get an appraiser to come in and say, hey, you got a new street, your property value went up. You got a new sewer line, which you can't even see, and your property value went up. A new water line, your property value went up. I mean, they're never going to do that. They're going to look at the house, and that's the basis of the value. So, there are solutions to it. One is they should go back and revisit that thing. The other is to pass the transportation utility. As I mentioned before, we got a utility that allows you to find a way to get the money to fix failing sewers. A water utility allows you to do the same thing. You have an electric utility that allows you to do the same thing. A stormwater utility. The only thing you don't have the authority to do a utility on is for your street purposes. And that's why some of these other cities are using franchise fees and things of that nature. But, this is really something, and I'm very disappointed, I would say, in some of the statewide organizations that they haven't found a way to get some alternative put back in when this thing really started. Went downhill real fast in the
it was in the mid-70s when they did that. So it's a problem. You could, if they give you utility, you'll have a way to fund these, which is a lot easier than trying to put it on property tax. And frankly, people should expect, it's like a roof on your house. You should, every 30 years, well, mine is, seems like it's every 10 years, I put a new roof on my house. You should put a new street. Pay the cost of putting a new street in front of your house.
Okay.
You aren't going to ever, I don't think we're ever going to get enough money in the property tax to do it. It's just, you know, with all the other competing things, it's not a great vehicle to add that amount in. But you've got a stormwater utility that's bringing about $5 million a year. I mean, that's for stormwater. Why can't you do something like that for streets? Because you don't have the ability to do it.
I have Mr. Ruska, then Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Campbell. No question right now? Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we're all in agreement we need to increase funding for the street maintenance. What I heard last time, and Richard, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, the 50-year life cycle is kind of where all these big, scary numbers are coming from. And I think what I heard last time on our streets, curb and gutter, we don't really know how long we can use mill and overlay to extend the life of those streets, unless there's a fundamental breakdown of the bed underneath the street. We may be able to extend the usable life of these streets in good condition for quite a long time. So it's definitely a problem, but I think with some of the newer technology that we've applied towards the streets, I think we've kind of relooked, you know, what that possible life cycle of the street is, and I think maybe it balanced the problem a little bit more.
Okay.
So one issue, Gary, I was going to kind of follow up on your point about the utility is still the, I mean, the size of the problem would make whatever utility bill probably equally as unappealing as, you know, what we have to do here.
Well, if you, maybe you can assess part of it too. I'm just saying this whole thing,
right.
That's why Minneapolis is the same boat. Almost every city's in the same boat. I mean, the next one's going to come, in my mind, is some of the suburbs who grew faster than we do. And their streets are going to age. I don't know that they've been laying money aside for this. One of the other things is, you know, I pointed out at the last meeting that for about 10 years and from 2000 to 2010, you had levy limits on. I mean, even if you wanted a levy in those years, you probably couldn't have levied enough money to do this. I mean, if you, before that, we didn't have levy limits, so in those years, the community could have. But in those years, it would have been 7 out of 10 years, you would have been stuck in place on those years anyway.
So it sounds to me like there's a couple of things we need to tackle. So one is prioritization of the infrastructure for continuing maintenance. Sounds like, and I agree, there's some sort of, we're going to have to figure out how to make these roads last longer than 50 years. There's really just no other path here. I don't know what that means. I don't know what you'll be driving on, but we're going to have to figure out a way to figure that out. So we also have to stem future liability here. So I think some of the ideas that are being floated around here, whether that's the districted trash, if that's concrete roadways versus asphalt roadways, we really have to have a set of tools that we're going to pick from about mitigating future liability for this. Because, I mean, when my children serve on the council or when your children serve on the council, I think it's one of those things about if they're staring at the same problem, we've probably failed them to some degree, even if it's not about taxing them, taxing the parents to pay for the children. It can be about why didn't we fix this when we already knew it was a problem. So I think I would like to maybe see, and I know what we've talked a little bit about it, I think we need to start putting together a portfolio of what we're going to use going forward and recommendations from Public Works on developments that are coming forward saying they're not meeting our criteria for reducing future roadway liability. Like, that's the sort of advice that needs to be had. That's the sort of way this needs to be tackled going forward. In terms of levying additional tax, we're extremely limited. It already looks like, you know, the overpay for the MSA account and the dissolution or dissolvement of the other accounts are going to push us to about the amount we can realistically levy for this year. So, I mean, I don't know how we go much more than status quo, but maybe one of the ways we approach this is by trying to fix future liabilities and new developments to stop digging the hole we're in. I think that's a good first step.
I took my map and drove in my ward and looked at the roads that are pointed out. The most of them weren't too bad. Some were pretty bad. You know, again, I think Richard made the comment that we can't see under the surface. But, you know, that's the people drive on the surface and they see the surface. And, you know, and I don't know that, you know, when you go out and look at our sidewalk ordinance and how almost pristine we keep our sidewalks, I guess I'm, you know, there's also a balance here a little bit. We don't need to have every road driving like, you know, brand new roads and every road perfectly manicured. You know, we want them nice, but we also have to create a balance there somewhere. I think Stephen makes the point here. He said, I would expect the majority of the citizens not to be in favor of large property tax increases in order to reduce unfunded liability of the maintenance. And I think we need to figure out some kind of a middle ground here. You know, a lot of these roads aren't the greatest, but, you know, they're roads. You know, we live in Minnesota, and I've been to a lot of Midwest cities that the roads are a lot worse. So keep that in mind as we kind of make our decisions here moving forward.
So one of the things about Minneapolis and St. Paul is their roads are in worse condition because their median age is much older than ours. We look artificially good because of the amount of roads that were built in the 90s and 2000s that really haven't hit that point yet. And I think the key thing and what I would really emphasize is as we have been making ourselves less efficient in terms of the ratio of revenues versus the amount of infrastructure we have to maintain, those cities are making themselves more efficient, and they're headed in the right direction. We are still continuing to head in the wrong direction, and that's why I think Mr. Campion's point about you got to stem the losses at some point, you got to do some triage and figure out how we're going to stop digging this hole bigger and bigger, that becomes increasingly important in our case because we got cornfields in all directions and we can build roads for many, many miles, but it's just going to make the problem worse and worse.
Mr. Campion, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I guess the other thing I would be in favor of is not spending the MSA count into a negative. I think that's artificially leading to budgets that probably look better than they should be. So I don't know what the ramifications are of that, and I'd like someone to give me some sort of understanding of why we would prefer to do that. Is that just expediting work that otherwise would not get done? Is
right.
that... I would rather not do the work and have the ramifications.
We can't go back to zero right in the beginning. We have to slowly get our way.
No, I will work towards zero. But I think I would rather have it go to zero and the work stop and the ramification of underfunding be clear than to forward spend a bunch of money we may not have. I think that's somewhat deceiving to do that. So I think that's something I would like to see get remedied here.
Right. Ms. Means.
You know, I'd like to think about our roads as more in terms of how it increases the safety, not only on top of the roads, but underneath the roads. You know, we need to do both. And I sure don't want to see the property tax level increase in too much. I know it's probably increased some this year, but for next year. But I'm wondering about those utility fees. Is that something that we could pursue to help pay for some of the infrastructure improvements that are needed now? And I don't think the legislative group is going to pass any street utility doesn't sound like to me, and it doesn't sound like that was in the paper, but it doesn't sound like that's a strong option. I like the idea of perhaps considering some franchise fees, you know, whether it's people's natural gas, RPU. You said we can't add another utility fee. Is that what I heard?
You can't legally do a street utility. The legislature would have to pass legislation allowing that.
But you can do a franchise fee to effectively do the same thing.
For those who use the right-of-way.
Correct.
Is there any way that, we could, there are nonprofits use the road, the people that patronize the nonprofits are coming in and using our roads, and of course their spaces. Is there any way that we can even think about assessing dollars to our current nonprofits that maybe have an income like a mega church, for example, that's not like the neighborhood church on the corner?
That'd be
difficult.
Know,
and I think
it'd
that's,
be difficult.
That's
know.
Fundamentally, I think, what we're struggling with, what we're trying to find. We can talk property taxes versus fees. We can talk nonprofits versus small business. Mm-hmm. But I think fundamentally it comes down to we're trying to strive for equity here. We want people to pay their fair share for development and maintenance of this infrastructure. So that's the challenge we're trying to figure out. Mr. Ruskin.
I was just going to throw out that the other thing I noticed in looking at the area is the majority of the road that's in trouble in my area is Broadway, which we have funds for. So really the area that's really needs the most work is the inner core, the area. I think, Mark, if you look at this map, it's a lot of your area, the downtown
thank you.
Section. Yeah. So, you know, I guess that makes sense. The older roads and that are, you know, built decades ago are the ones needing the most repair. So, you know, just a food for thought that it's, I don't know how, it's really a kind of a concentrated area, if you look at it, that's really needing the most help.
All right. Other thought, Mr. Andrew?
Now, it may not be a long-term solution, but I would favor putting a bump on the property tax. People universally tell me, don't give me an extra fee, put it on my property tax. I know what they really mean is take it out of what I already gave you, but yet that's what they say is put it on the property tax. And again, there's the fundamental issue of nonprofits and how that factors in. But people like the idea that they can, you know, deduct that property tax from their federal income taxes, and gives them some feeling that, you know, they're getting at least a partial break on it. So I know it's not a long-term solution, but that's what I would favor in the short term, is put part of that this year on the property tax and see where we go in the future.
So, Mr. Bilbeck?
Yeah. I think, you know, what we've seen, and I think Michael hit it right on the nail, on the top of the nail here, when he talks about it took us 50 years to get here, that we're not going to solve this in 1 year, but I think what it says also, we have to be resourceful enough to look at how many different options we can take a look at to help reduce the problem that we're continuing to build, as well as trying to nibble away at it. And I think Mr. Hickey points out the property tax. None of us want to do that. None of us like that idea. But we've got to start turning the tide. We can't keep going down every year, getting further and further into the hole with the roads. And I thanks, Mr. Ruska, for pointing out the core neighborhoods. And I think it also goes back to the comment that was made earlier about not knowing what's underneath. And what you're seeing in a lot of the core areas is the vast majority of the road could be good, but a 35, 40, 50-foot area looks like it just the bottom gave away, and there's nothing there. And so there's a lot of that patchwork. Unfortunately, the patchwork doesn't work all that well to make the road last a lot longer. It isn't long before you see where the seams are, which you have problems. So I think we have to be open-minded enough to look at it, multiple ways to try to deal with this and start to nip away at it, because Mr. Kampkin's correct. We don't want our kids, our grandkids, to be the ones to have to solve a problem that we allowed to continue when we saw it. So I think we're going to have to use multiple ways to address it, and probably some property tax as well.
Okay, Mr. Kampkin.
So getting back to this idea, because it's said often, and probably I would kind of like to push it somewhere, estimating the tax efficiency of a development relative to the utilities that are installed, is that something there's a software for already? Is there some sort of thing our staff could use to be giving us an estimate? I'm looking to staff, maybe.
I can't address that specifically, but you're looking at me, and I thought I'd respond in terms of looking at future growth patterns. You can avoid some of these liabilities and public facilities costs by managing your assets such that you're taking advantage of that which is in place, and you're concentrating more growth and development and redevelopment on the corridors that have capacity and have the ability to serve those areas.
So incentivizing the use of utilities we've already installed, for instance.
Direction that the comp plan has taken is really to look at how the nodes and the corridors can really help relieve some of the growth and the liability of the assets.
And I think what I can kind of envision is a 1 to 10 rating of this is a 10, it reuses, or it uses and leverages assets we've already put in place, it's taking advantage of this. It's a 1, we're having to put in a new lift station to support this, it's going out to an area that hasn't yet been developed, it's brand new. That's the sort of efficiency. And then there's this next level that's, it doesn't only have to be efficient, it has to, how well does it pay for itself over time? I really think that I've seen software packages, so I hope that we have access to them, or I think, I don't know if Acela has it, or we have to find something, but there are packages out there that will basically give you an estimate of what the tax implications will be for a development based on the property taxes and the amount of infrastructure you're having to put in place to support them. It's probably beyond time we start getting some sort of feedback about that efficiency. If we have to start at, does it meet our desire to leverage existing utilities, and that's the rating we can start with, I really think we should quickly then move into, are we getting the most efficient use of our property tax dollars with this property? Is it going to be a net negative? It's not always that we won't support a net negative. Like, I don't have to take a broad stance like that. Simply knowing that you're supporting a net negative is enabling us to make a stance about it. Otherwise, we just sit here and we get told that a council member Wojcik will tell us it's a net negative, but until we can quantify the negative or we can quantify the benefit, I think it's easy to look it off. So I'd really like to start, and maybe with the council's support, let's start implementing, or let's start talking about what could be implemented as part of the comp plan, as part of this process, into our development process, so we get that feedback to act on, instead of just, throwing darts.
So that's one good avenue in terms of, what are changes we can make from a policy standpoint that might have financial impact in a positive way. I get that. But then it seems the question on the table seems to be the more current financial shortfall. And I think, if I understand correctly, what the staff is looking for is there some preference for a strategy so that they can then fold that in as they consider the budgeting and some of the financial details that we're going to consider in the next month or so. Am I correct? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, this changes the game, I suppose. On the 29th of September, you'll have to adopt that preliminary property tax, which is the maximum, and that'll sort of be the indication of what you're willing to do over and beyond certain requirements that we have, but we know of.
Right. Mr. Wojcik.
There's been a lot of talk about if we had the right tools, we'd be able to address this with the, with the street utility, and that would be the most fair and just way to handle this, because you can put the private costs back on the private parties, and but we haven't had that tool for 40 years, and sitting around wishing we had a tool to solve the problem while we make it worse and worse is not a particularly good strategy either. I don't have a high level of confidence that the legislature is going to get anything of any substance done in any time in the near future. I know that opinion is probably shared by some. I do think that the data that we have, seeing how big this liability is on an annual basis, is critically important, and I think that we should direct staff to report this to us on an annual basis so we can see whether it's growing or shrinking. My preference would probably be not to do the tax levy, but do the fees instead, because it spreads it out to a lot of the parties that otherwise don't pay. There is the deductibility for some people on that interest, but it tends to that benefit tends to accrue pretty largely to more upper income people that can actually itemize and deduct, and that's a little bit of a concern, because you got seniors that might not even have a mortgage, and it's not going to do anything to help them at that point. Going forward, it's really a super easy equation, because every piece of infrastructure that generates you more money than it costs to maintain will reduce the liability. Every piece of infrastructure you build that takes more to maintain than what it produces will make the situation worse. And the problem is, we're probably 90-10 going down that road of building stuff that makes us worse, and we've been doing that for a long time. Ballpark, it's interesting that my numbers came out very close to what Richard's, his staff's numbers were in terms of what the total liabilities were and how far we were behind. And it translates to roughly, after you pay for all of your annual operating expenses, you need about $20,000 per mile per year to address the capital needs of roadways. And you just we don't touch that in most areas. We don't come anywhere close to it, and that's how that liability got so big. So I would not want us to hold off waiting for a tool that doesn't exist to come back and directly address us. I think that we could make some decisions that could be undone should that tool become available. And I also, I do think that spreading it out over a combination of taxes, fees is far better than just doing it on one or the other, because I think it's going to be a large hit either way. Maybe one last thing is just, when we're talking about the, we're always going to get the message, well, why don't you just do more with less? And the one of the issues with that is if you look at the 22.9 million we're behind annually and more if you take out that one-time money, you could take out enormous portions of the entire city budget and not come close to that. I think I looked the other day, you could get rid of libraries, you could get rid of parks, you could get rid of all the arts, and you still wouldn't have enough money to address just our annual needs. I'm not suggesting we get rid of parks. I saw your head pop up right there. I like the parks. but I think it's just, I think people need to understand the magnitude of the issue too, that there's not just little things that we can change. This is something that is substantial that has to change.
All right. So I think once again, what direction are we wanting to give staff as they start to prepare the budget? And
I want to know what the level funding would look like. Because at this point, it's hard to tell from these numbers if level funding is going to require a $2 million bump.
And you won't know that by the 30th of September.
Even if you put your best guys on it?
Well, I don't know if I know how much of that $2.9 million we have left. I suppose I can do our best to figure it. I'll have to figure that anyway to recommend an amount for you to consider. And I guess if you want to do that, then you'll just add another million or whatever into that amount.
I want to know that, plus I want to know what we've been accruing into the MSA, right? Because we're saying, I mean, if we've been, the dollars are fungible, right?
Well, I think we have so much money coming in every year from MSA for construction and some for maintenance, and that amount won't really increase much, but we'll still have that.
Okay.
And that advance, we'll still have to do some advance funding because we can't really cut ourselves back to zero right away because we're still going to have those needs we have to fund with some MS. So we'll have to do some advance funding, hopefully not in the same amount, so we eventually reduce that amount of owing or deficit we have in that account.
So should the question be, should we be doing new MSA funding?
Yes, I think we'll still need to have some street projects that you'll look at when we go to the capital improvement budget that'll have that money in there.
Okay.
And so you'll have the option also at that time to look and see where how much we're recommending for 2017 out of our MSA monies.
Okay. So I guess what I'm trying to get to today is we understand, we acknowledge there's an issue out there and we need to figure out a financial strategy, but what is it we're trying to decide or direction we're trying to give today, or are we prepared to give any other than just acknowledging got these issues and it could be a combination of fees or taxes or whatever. What, Mr. Hickey?
No, and I think we just talked about it. I mean, depending what that J2200 account is, you know, even if we do put property tax, and at best it might be maintaining or we might even be potentially backsliding depending on how much we want to commit. So I think that's a pretty big unknown at this point.
I think some of the things Michael talked about, but other financing mechanism is something you're going to have to study for some time with the input by various groups that would be affected by it. And so I don't think your position is to say anything about that today.
Understood. And I heard that, you know, there might be some policy changes that could have some future benefit. But I'm trying to answer that question. Is there anything we could decide or give direction on over the next 60 to 90 days to help us craft our budget for 2017, realizing this is going to be a multi-year solution, but what is it that we can decide to help us?
I don't know if we need anything today. Obviously, if we go through this process of establishing a maximum property tax levy, and then as you look at what you decide during the budget time, you'll sort of, with those factors in mind, come to some conclusion. I don't know if you can come to anything else today other than if you said some idea that, yes, you want to put $2 million extra on top of whatever you're going to levy or $1 million on top of everything you're going to levy. But I don't know if that you're in a position to do something like that.
I think one of the few things that, at least myself, that I'm willing to say today is I'm not in favor of any option that talks about bonding or borrowing the money to fix this problem. That just just seems like a bad pattern.
So just adding up the numbers of J2, 2200 and 2201, we get like $9.6 million left. The remainder is about $2.9 million divided by 5 is about $1.3 million per year being drawn off those funds annually if you aggregate it over the lifetime. That sounds about like a reasonable...
I'm going to have to dig into that. I don't know that.
But we could estimate it that. It's probably like $1.3 million. So if we leverage $1.3, that would be flat for just those two accounts and doesn't account for anything else we had to come in. So I think there's going to be some additional property tax levy bump just to hold it even. I think that's what we really need to know.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful to be surrounded by all these wonderful technical minds. I'm going to be real simple. Our roads are at the point that they're at their end of the life, some of them. And I think it's not a house issue, increasing the value of property, anything like that. I think it really has to do with safety and being proactive. It sounds like the property tax increase, keeping it low, is one option that can be considered. Secondly, I think we should pursue that franchise option. I also don't know what the deal is about this this utility fund, but maybe we need to continue to lobby for this during the session coming up in May 2017. So that's, and you know, the franchise, RPU, or I don't know what the other franchises are, but I think we need to look at that as well.
You could also consider, as you go ahead, levying or special assessing the overlays or chip sealing even. Other cities do that. I mean, it'd be a lot of more paperwork, and of course you have to have all these public hearings and get all that input from the people that may want to pay it, but other cities do that, and we don't do that right now.
Mr. Ruskin?
One thing that concerns me in this meeting today is it seems to me that leadership from the administration, leadership from Public Works are on totally different pages. So I'd like to see the two of you get together and go over, get on the same page, and then come up with some options that we can consider, because right now it seems like I'm getting mixed signals. I don't know.
Well, I think Richard and I are somewhat on the same page. I don't view that. But Richard would probably recommend that you levy $5 million on top of everything else, and I look at it more politically.
Well, and you also look at, right, I mean,
maybe
you're
putting
$5
million
together,
in this camp, I should recommend that from my standpoint. I have to look at the political reality.
Right, and you're putting together the budget. So I guess I'd like to see some different options with the administration and Public Works together to say, here's some different options we can look at, and here's the ramifications of it. Because right now, I see that as differently.
But we also need some response back from you. You know, we brought forth some things that would help take some proposals away from the property tax. But you didn't want to do that, which is fine. But so without that direction from you, we can't tell you what you should do.
Right.
We can recommend some stuff.
Yeah, right. But, okay. Well, it just seems to me when I'm asking questions, when I ask questions, I'm getting two different.
Now, Richard's probably doing his job by recommending, hey, we could need $5 million a year on top. I don't disagree with that necessarily, the fifth philosophy that Michael's brought forth in the unfunded liability and other things. But politically, I view that we're working with the councils all those years. It isn't going to happen.
Right. Yeah, you have that experience.
So it's good for he to recommend that, but then it's me to temper that, my recommendations to you.
Mr. Wojcik.
I want to throw out, well, five things. First being, let's take do nothing off the table.
Yes. Take what off the table?
Do nothing, off the table.
Definitely.
Second, I don't want to see a one-year plan. I don't want to see next year's numbers. I want to direct staff to come back with a 10 to 15 year plan to close this gap. Third, I want to see annual reporting of this, looking at both the annual the shortfall in the annual funds and also the life cycle that accumulated liability that I call about $1.4 billion. I want to track that on an annual basis. That should be in our budget every year. Fourth, I'm talking about this for years. I want to eliminate some of these subsidies that are going to basically market rate projects that are largely money losers on the infrastructure side. This is like the sewer subsidy that we're giving that I talked about. Let's at least make those pay their full cost so we can divert some of that money elsewhere, and or just return it and understanding that there's taxes that are going up. And fifth, I would like to stop accepting this money-losing infrastructure, or at least significantly scale it back, because we're doing so much of that right now. And I think that those five items, over the course of a couple decades, can get us back onto some level footing.
Explain that last one a little bit.
Yeah.
Stop accepting money-losing infrastructure.
Oh, you guys might remember every time we've had a cul-de-sac in front of us for the last...
but I would argue that every time we build any public infrastructure, there's a maintenance cost.
Yep.
Whether it's a cul-de-sac or one linear foot of mm-hmm. street or a park, for that matter, or anything, they all come with a maintenance cost. So if I use that logic, I would say we don't build another road, period.
But you're not using that logic, you're abusing that logic. And the reason you're abusing it is because not all roads are created equal. We put a substantial amount of money into redoing Second Street from 52 out to Circle Drive. You look at what the property values are along there and what they're generating in taxes because of the mix of uses and the redevelopment that's occurring. That is a big financial winner for the city, or at least it appears early on that it's going to be. There's also public purpose because those streets are moving the entire community around, not just individuals. Then you look at a residential street which only serves 10 houses on a cul-de-sac. There is no public benefit to that. The only benefit is the 10 folks that live there. And we know that the revenues along that particular road are not nearly enough to generate it. So not every road is going to have the same kind of productive uses available to it. If you keep building these money losers time and time again, it's not too different from a Ponzi scheme where you're just building up a huge liability over time.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a fair comparison of Second Street versus a cul-de-sac. You could argue, make that same argument for any residential street, that anytime we rehab or rebuild them, what's the negligible value?
If you can get through, at least you can say that the community can benefit from that. There's nobody outside of the folks on a cul-de-sac that ever benefit from a cul-de-sac. That's one of the key differences.
Mr. Campion.
So that's a little bit of an ideological battle, and everyone's willing to or can take a side on that particular point. I want today to just argue the point that we need to know what that cost is. It's not about making that decision. And Ed can have one idea and Michael can have another idea about what the line should be, but we need to have the data to make that decision. So when we get a packet that doesn't have that data, I think that that's not enabling us to make the decision that, look, over a 50-year time span, this cul-de-sac will lose $42,000 while this through street will generate something else. I think that is the sort of information that we need to start having if we're going to start attacking a 50-year problem. You don't attack it with, frankly, I hate to say this, but you don't attack it with $1 million here, because it's a $1 billion problem, right? So, we can talk about shifting $1 million this year, and I'm happy to try and figure out what number works and makes sense for our community, our taxpayers, but we have to attack this with long-term solutions, not just today's solutions. So, $1.3 million looks like what it would need to hold us steady. If it goes up to $2 million, I think we need to start talking, but can we get a number back maybe by next cow that just says, here's an estimate of what it looks like will be left in this account? So that we can start factoring out what it would have been 5 years ago and know what we're spending out of there on an annual basis.
Let me see if I hope to have some of that for the 29th of September.
Okay. Oh, so you don't even think it'll be right until the day we have to vote for the increase.
Right.
And you're going to have to put something preliminary together based on our feedback before that.
Well, one of the problems is with that truth of taxation stuff. They make you adopt something before you even have all the budget details. And I haven't even started looking at that budget yet, so I don't have all that. I don't have all that information.
I know it's a crazy way to run government where we have these artificial deadlines in my mind.
I think we have to wait to see what we get back then, because it's hard for me to throw a dart.
Well, I don't think we're going to. Other than that, Michael threw out some ideas, but unless you all adopt that, then the staff won't be doing those things. And I know we've had the discussion before about the subsidies. They mentioned we subsidize the water reclamation plant or the sewer utility. Mm-hmm. With the PIF, I think, what is $2,900 a house now, or $31,000, something like that? If you theoretically made all the new people pay for that, then you have a PIF probably of $30,000, $35,000, which is not realistic either in terms of our economy. Our economic model is built on growth, like it or not. I mean, if we were a static city and didn't have any growth, we'd be in tough shape. So you do need some growth in valuation. And so some of those costs are socialized. And I do think that to a certain extent, you need to socialize some of those expenses for the new people. You couldn't have all those people. I'm in town right now. I've got my sewer. I'm not going to pay for anybody else's. And there's some validity in that point. But I do think if you're going to have a successful city, you do need to socialize some of those expenses. You can't just put it all on the new stuff that comes, the new growth that comes, even though there's some validity in saying, well, all that new growth, they should pay their own way. I shouldn't have to pay anything for the new people that come in or the new houses. And so I don't disagree necessarily with Michael. I don't think it's economically realistic to try to achieve what he's saying.
It's a negotiating tactic, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same thing with all of this, is you say pay everything and you end up paying a little bit more.
I'm not trying to pick on you, Michael. I just don't want you to say later on that I didn't do what you said you wanted, unless all these people say
I can certainly bring it to a vote, and
yes,
if it doesn't
can.
Pass. And what I would say is that, we've gone through the numbers, and you're 30 to 35K. I don't think it's that high. I don't think it's anywhere quite near that. But you are associating new people coming to the community paying this, and I don't see it that way. It's not actually new people. It's some of those new people that come to the community move into existing housing, move into existing apartments. It's actually if you're building a single-family home in Rochester, you're pretty well off at this point. And my thing is, with limited fiscal dollars, those are maybe not the people that we should be subsidizing, particularly on the backs of the absolute poorest people in Rochester, which our fees will hit everyone. That's my concern.
All right. I think that's a little bit of a slippery slope, because from the standpoint that that's a normal function of growth. As people build new homes, it creates housing stock for other people, mm-hmm. That are maybe at the entry level. So I, all I'm saying is I wouldn't simplify it quite that.
You really got to stop saying slippery slope, though.
All right.
I do think that in terms of my dealing with you for our preliminary property tax levy, I think I have what I need, and we'll see what you think about it
right.
at the time comes.
Well, once again, I would say that I don't want to see an option that requires borrowing money. I do agree with Michael that it's going to have to be a multi-year strategy. I think there were some advantages, as an aside, there was some advantage when we started asking for a five-year personnel plan.
Yep.
It gives us a chance to look beyond the immediate horizon. So clearly anything you come back with is going to have to be a multi-year strategy. We're not going to fix this in 1 year. It's impossible. Beyond that, are we given, and I realize the fundamental flaws of the budgeting process and the truth in taxation deadline, but have we given you enough, based on Mr. Ruska's comments, to try to make sure we're all on the same page?
Well, last year you did adopt an amount. Now, that amount may scare the people, but I came in less than that. So I guess I would still be recommending an amount that hopefully has some flexibility. And even though you have to decide whether that amount's too scary for the public to receive.
Right.
And you'll be doing that on the 29th, Mr. Campbell?
Yeah.
29th
of September.
My personal thought is I don't really like playing the games that the state's trying to have us make.
The last Monday was
the 26th.
As I've said the last couple of years, I'd set it at $1 billion, just so ridiculous everyone realizes it doesn't mean a thing. I mean, other than having a report that looks silly, there is no functional downside to that.
I'll say one other thing about the property tax, and that you get 72% of the problems apparently residential. And the residential people pay about 56% of the property tax. Mm-hmm. So that property tax put a big burden on commercial and industrial,
yep.
especially.
Yep.
Unfair burden, I think, to a certain extent. But if that's the only money source you're looking at going forward.
We have no control over that, which I think is the important aspect
right.
of that particular statement.
You don't, yeah,
was
the
it
rank
put
down,
an unfair burden on
the
small businesses?
Right.
And we have no control.
Okay.
Okay.
So what else can we answer? how can we help staff, you know, turn those numbers or come in with finer-tuned numbers, or is it not? How can we help?
Well, I think at this stage, we'll do our best to bring you back something by the 26th of September. That may not answer all your questions, but... And then try to put together a budget based on
likely
that.
Likely provoke additional discussion once
right.
we start to see all the numbers. So, anything else?
That's it for me.
For today?
Well, we have a couple of other quick topics, I believe. Ms. Means, you want to talk about bicycles?
I do, just briefly, and I know we've all received, complaints about the images on the front pages of the post bulletin about people riding on the plaza. And I just wanted to state that our ordinance says it's unlawful for any person while visiting to operate a bicycle on the Peace Plaza. And I think we adhere to that real strictly. But this was like a photo op opportunity for whomever took the pictures to illustrate how a nice ride is going to build into the health and wellness in our community, and it be an adventure for some of our visitors and patients as they want to explore downtown. And I just didn't want, I wanted to clarify, and I also talked with our city clerk today, and there wasn't any permit granted. This was just a one-time example of how positive this nice ride in Minnesota will be for our community, and clarifying that the riding probably wasn't the best way to demonstrate that riding on the plaza, and that our ordinance is clear.
Okay. I would agree, Mr. Mayor.
I'll take full responsibility. I made the comment that this is not legal, but we're going to do it for this one time. When we did the ribbon cutting right in front of the stage on the Peace Plaza, and we rode down the bicycle around out in the street a little bit, came right back. Maybe Andrew should have had that in the report. I don't know the story. But I'll take full responsibility.
All right, that's acknowledged.
Was anyone hurt?
It wasn't about being hurt. It was about seeing the image of the riding on Peace Plaza.
Oh, okay. I thought the report said someone was injured.
No, I you said you got complaints. I, 115,000 citizens. I had three complaints, but they were all from the same person. So I don't know how big of an issue it was.
It doesn't matter. And mine was not all from the same person.
So I have a question for
okay. I didn't. I just got yours.
That's
so.
An
question for Mr. Campion. The compost ordinance. Were you talking about bringing that up today, or at the council meeting?
I wanted to bring it up today because I mostly want to hand this over to staff. I kind of gotten a little bit of a runaround on whose particular jurisdiction a compost regulation would fall under, and with the consent of the council, I'd love to just give this to administration and ask and the city attorney and ask them to bring forward an ordinance with a few small changes. If you guys had an opportunity to review 50 inches from the ground, 4 cubic yards in residential areas, 12 to 18 inches setback from property lines, compost bins must be closed at all times except for when they're being filled or emptied, and cotton posts must not be a nuisance to neighbors.
Yeah, it seems straightforward enough. I think we could ask staff if council is in agreement to just go ahead and draft it. The only thing that frustrates me is that we have to develop or craft an ordinance for a very negligible occurrence. That's just too bad.
It's very straightforward. I have no issues except for there's a couple vague things in there. I don't think you can say the setback has to be 12 to 18 inches. You got to pick a number.
Oh,
and,
okay. Yeah,
and you also, yeah. And the last one gets very good vague point. That it can't be a nuisance to your neighbors. I think
we'll
just have to
we'll clean
that
up a little bit.
I'll have to spend some more time hanging out with the city attorney to get my
well, if you want to bring it forward.
Yeah, so I would like the staff to clean it up, and I'll bring it forward at the next meeting.
Mr. Bilderback.
Yeah, just as long as we're talking about plans that we're working on for new ordinances, I'm working with Mr. Reeves. One of the issues that I'm having in with my neighborhood or the ward is that people who have habitually not taken care of their yards, and then we end up after we have to wait for another complaint to
restart the entire process. We're looking at some different ordinances and different possibilities into developing more of a list so that people that end up on that list will stay on that list for a year or two, and then so that we will have staff go out and check to and if their yards are getting to be the point again where they're unmaintained, that we will automatically start the notification process instead of waiting for it to be complaint driven. So just starting down that road more later.
All right. Anything else for this afternoon?
Yes, I got my compost bin from the city, so I better not.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Already,
the
dissenters.
I get home.